This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Culture and Society. We shall close with the news for young people. I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. The Holy See Press Office issued a brief statement on Thursday morning saying Pope Francis had a peaceful Wednesday night and that he was resting. The statement followed another one which was issued on Wednesday afternoon which said the Holy Father had had a chest X-ray test which confirmed a slight improvement to his lungs and that his overall condition remained stable, though complex. Pope Francis was admitted to Gemelli Catholic Hospital in Rome on February 14th for double pneumonia. In another development, the Catholic Church marked on Thursday, March 13th, the 12th anniversary of the election of Pope Francis as the 266th successor of St. Peter the Apostle. An Argentine national known as José Mario Bergoglio, he was elected Pope on 13th March 2013 at the age of 76 years and took the name Francis. Different Catholic bishops' conferences and heads of state and representatives of governments have sent him messages of congratulations and best wishes. A news agency of the Dicastery for Evangelization, Fides, has issued a report indicating that 145 Catholic priests have been kidnapped in Nigeria in the past 10 years. 130 of them have been freed, 11 have been killed, and 4 are still missing. 99% of these kidnappings have been associated with ransom. Most of the kidnappings have taken place in the southern and northern parts of Nigeria. The Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Nasala in Mozambique, the Right Reverend Alberto Arejura, has told reporters that Cyclone Jude, which landed in Nampula and Zambezia provinces on Monday this week, left behind a trail of destruction. The cyclone came with violent winds running at a speed of 140 kilometers per hour and heavy rains, which killed 6 people and wounded 20 others, in addition to destroying homes, schools, health facilities, places of worship and farms, as well as roads and bridges. Thousands have been displaced. Bishop Arejura has appealed to governments, humanitarian agencies, and to people of goodwill to help the displaced people. Urgent needs include food, clean water, medicine, clothing, and temporary shelter. As Malawian voters prepare to take part in the general elections scheduled for September 16th this year, the country's Catholic bishops have issued a statement reminding the population and political leaders of the current challenges. The bishops expressed concern about the declining economy and the rise of inflation, which have increased the cost of living, especially for the poor. They also lamented about corruption and the exploitation of Malawi's resources for the benefits of a few at the expense of the majority. Addressing themselves to Malawian politicians, especially at this time when they are looking for votes, the bishops appealed to them to stop dividing the people on tribal lines and to desist from inciting violence among their supporters against supporters of their rivals, underlining that these practices are tearing the country apart and are contrary to the teaching of our Lord Jesus Christ. The bishops appealed also to youth in Malawi not to allow themselves to be used by politicians to commit violence. The Catholic bishops of Liberia issued a lengthy message last week rejecting the government's proposed public health bill, which, among other things, seeks to legalize abortion, same-sex marriage, and euthanasia, also known as mass killing. In the message, the bishops called upon the Liberian government to reconsider the bill because it threatens the right to life and challenges Liberia's moral and religious foundations. The bishops reiterated the Catholic Church's teaching on the sanctity of life, stating that human life must be protected from conception to natural death. The Lenten message also called for national reconciliation and healing, inviting Liberians to reflect on their roles in society and to work together to build a better future. The Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General on Violence Against Children, Najat Malamjid, issued a report on Wednesday indicating a significant increase in child victims of trafficking over the last 5 years. The report notes that while official information shows that children make up almost 4 in 10 victims of trafficking worldwide, the number caught up in this illegal practice is much higher. We have a report.
In a new report, Najat Malamjid, who's the Special Representative of the UN Secretary General on Violence Against Children, said that traffickers are quick to exploit technological advancements and people in emergencies. She said that children, and mainly girls, are increasingly vulnerable as poverty, food insecurity, humanitarian crisis and conflict lead to displacement and violence, which are among the main drivers of illegal trafficking.
Conviction for trafficking in children remain low and perpetrators continue to enjoy impunity. Corruption, stigma, fear and the lack of protection limit children's ability to report and seek justice. As a result, trafficking in children remains a low-cost and low-risk yet high-profit crime generating billions of dollars annually.
Addressing the Human Rights Council in Geneva, Ms. Malamjid warned that trafficking networks are growing alarmingly and are increasingly well organized. She said that criminal ringleaders now use artificial intelligence to lower their overheads and reduce the likelihood of detection. The senior UN official also noted that the demand for exploitative services involving children is increasing, from sexual exploitation, domestic slavery, child marriage, recruitment into armed groups, forced begging and criminal activities. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Leaders of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, announced on Thursday that they would pull their troops out of the Democratic Republic of Congo, where they have been helping the government to fight M23 rebels. The decision was taken during a virtual summit held on Thursday. The pullout would be a phased withdrawal. The leaders noted that even though the troops would be pulled out of Congo, the bloc would continue to support interventions aimed at bringing lasting peace. The troops were sent to Congo 2 years ago. They were provided by South Africa, Malawi, and Tanzania. They have, however, made many losses in their confrontations with the rebels. In January this year, for example, 19 of them were killed when the M23 captured the city of Goma and the town of Sake. Currently, about 600 South African and an unknown number of Malawian and Tanzanian troops are held in Goma and Sake as prisoners of war by M23. Since January, the rebels have captured more territory from the Congolese government, forcing it to agree this week to hold peace talks with them. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has expressed concern about the intentions of a French-Congolese musician, Gandhi Alimasi Juna, commonly known by his professional name as Maita James, who is organizing a concert in the French city of Paris on April 7th, a date that is marked worldwide as the International Day of Reflection on the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi in Rwanda. Mr. Juna is known to be a denier of the 1994 Rwandan genocide and an admirer of the people who committed that genocide. UNICEF, which has its head offices in Paris, has called upon the musician to postpone the concert in order to give the commemoration of the 1994 Rwandan genocide the respect and significance it deserves. The company organizing the concert has offered to donate the proceeds from the event to UNICEF to support Congolese children. A UNICEF official who is in contact with Mr. Juna's team and the organizers said one of the objectives of the concert is to deny that the 1994 Rwandan genocide did exist and warned that this would be an insult to the survivors of the genocide. Reports from Uganda speak of a rise in the number of unqualified practitioners who have infiltrated the health sector and are claiming to be medical doctors and nurses. Some illegitimately obtain medical licenses, while others run private clinics without licenses. They not only perform basic medical care, but sometimes conduct surgeries and other complex procedures, leading to serious health consequences and death of the patients.
This is Culture and Society, and you are welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. The Catholic Church celebrates a jubilee every 25 years. The reigning Pope convokes this important milestone in the life of the Church, a practice that dates back to 1300. For the Catholic Church, the jubilee is a year of remission of sins, reconciliation, conversion, and sacramental penance. It is also called a holy year and is the period during which the Pope grants plenary indulgence to the faithful who travel to Rome and perform particular religious practices such as passing through the Holy Door, confessing, receiving communion, praying, and performing a work of piety, mercy, and penance. The 2025 Jubilee is centered on the theme Pilgrims of Hope. As the Holy Father Pope Francis so beautifully expressed it, every Catholic is called upon to fan the flame of hope that has been given us and help everyone to gain new strength and certainty by looking to the future with an open spirit, a trusting heart, and far-sighted vision. The Jubilee celebrations began on Christmas Eve on 24th December 2024 with Pope Francis knocking on the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican. One of the major highlights of this year's Jubilee is the celebration of the Jubilee of Artists and the World of Culture, which was held between 15th and 18th February. The occasion attracted experts from prestigious artistic centers and institutions of learning who sat together to explore new languages and strategies for the valorization of religious and artistic heritage. It was a rich program of events that celebrated the profound connection between art and spirituality. Among the participants was Claudio Mario Betti, the director of the Rome campus of the Australian Catholic University. On the sidelines of that busy event, Betty spoke to Vatican Radio, emphasizing how important it is today to understand that culture is at the root of the transmission of the Catholic faith. He also explained to Vatican Radio's Thaddeus Jones how we can transmit the faith that we are living through our own cultures.
We were a bit sorry because we were not able to meet the Pope, but of course he is sick. However, I think it's a crucial element in the overall experience of the Jubilee to be able to celebrate the Jubilee of Culture. It was quite an impressive moment, and the liturgy was very important, and the homily that the Pope gave is a crucial moment in understanding the role of culture within the Catholic Church today.
What do you think is particularly relevant and important when we're looking at culture and we're celebrating it with the Jubilee being the occasion for that, even from your own work and your own experience?
extremely important. I think that we need to understand that culture is at the root of transmission of the Catholic faith. It is crucial for us to understand how we can transmit the faith that we are living. And culture is the way through which we transmit the faith we are living. We need to redefine what culture is, and we need to do it without fear of facing a world that is rapidly changing. We need to understand that the world, and that's part of what the Pope said, the world needs creators of culture. And he needs creation of culture. And the Pope said creator of culture, but it was Catholic culture probably, but also creator of cultures. We are living in a world that is deculturized. I'm not sure that I'm using the right word. And that means that people think that they are the beginning of history and the end of history. And this is exactly what the church cannot be. The church lives within history and can only exist within history. And that's why I think that culture needs to be the brick on which we build our presence in the world.
How do you think we can do that today, as you were mentioning, in this very turbulent time where culture is almost disappearing? And we talk about AI, we talk about polarization in society and inability to perhaps dialogue and listen to one another. How do we keep culture alive in today's day and age?
First of all, I think we need to reflect on what is happening in our world. I don't think we have all the elements to understand the world in which we're living at its full. I am the director of a campus here, and when I meet 2,000 students every year, they're young people. And I find that this problem of culture is a problem that hits hard on young generation. It all takes away from this young generation the ability to react to the world, in the sense it takes away the weapons that they could have in order to face the difficulties of the world. It leaves them scared because they have no history. They have no past. And of course, people who have no past cannot have future. I think that this is something that we need to understand. As Catholics, we need to understand that we need to rebuild culture that knows where we are coming from, but at the same time has no fear to where we are going. And this is, I think, crucial in today's understanding of our faith.
And lastly, in terms of being artisans of hope, that was the theme. It's obviously the theme of the Jubilee as well, hope. Do you see hope in this area of trying to keep culture alive apart from promote it, strengthen it, and rebuild it?
The real problem today is that we may be tempted to become pessimists. In front of the difficulties we are facing as Catholics, but as ordinary people as well, but think about it as a person within the Catholic Church, we see so much happening and so difficult to understand, so tragic. Think about wars. Think about the growth of poverty. Think about the growth of injustice and conflicts of all kinds. I think that we have the temptation of becoming pessimists. But pessimism becomes atheism, because we, at the end, we end up thinking that nothing can be done. I think that the Jubilee of Hope is a moment in which we are told that pessimism and that nothing is forever, and that pessimism is not a good counsel. And we are told that hope does not disappoint. And this is the main message of this Jubilee. And let's begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Let me go ahead on this. There used to be a theologian, a very important theologian, who died in Russia, in the Soviet Union, Pavel Florensky. He used to say, we're living in a time like in a rapid of history, that we cannot navigate this rapid of history without optimism and hope for the future. We cannot navigate that unless, if we try to navigate it with the stubbornness of our pessimism, our boat will be submerged. We need to understand that behind the rapids of history that we are facing and every generation faces, I think that we're facing one which is rather hard and heavy today. We need to be able to see a quiet river that leads us to a different future.
Would you like to add anything?
The point on the meeting was the world needs the creators of culture. I think that any one of us can be a creator of culture. I think that we need to try to understand what creation of culture means. it does not mean that we all have to be artists or painters or whatever, but we need to recreate a culture of the we. I think that this is the most important thing that this Jubilee tells us, that the church is a we, and it's not agglomeration of many eyes. So I think that this is the main message that the Pope sends. We need to go back and to rebuild the we after having drowned in a world of I.
Director of the Rome campus of the Australian Catholic University, Claudio Mario Betti, speaking in a special interview with Vatican Radio's Thaddeus Jones on the sidelines of the Jubilee of Arts and the World of Culture, which was held between 15th and 18th February 2025 here in Rome. And that is all we have time for today in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. In this edition, you can hear more on UN News' Pierre Blondel's interview with Fatou Jang from Gambia and Benjamin Strzelecki from Poland, two members of the UN Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group on Climate Change. In the face of rising tides threatening coastal communities, along with the urgent need for global energy transition, the two young climate activists who are nearing the end of their tenure say climate change is no distant crisis, it is a present reality. In this edition, they discuss bridging grassroots activism and high-level policy making. Blondel asked Fatou Jang if their activism resonated with policymakers.
When you've brought those stories to global spaces, do you feel they resonated with decision makers?
I think they do, because at the end of the day, some of these decision makers are from the same part of the world that we are from. It's about the political will. How are they making sure that they're using their political, you know, positions to influence changes, to influence action? And I think that is where it matters the most.
If they listen and they don't take action, then at the end of the day, that's not what we hope to achieve.
Benjamin, you've coordinated youth energy networks and worked with organizations like the International Renewable Energy Agency. So you've talked about legitimacy, but what other challenges in bringing your voices into those big international spaces that you've seen, and what's worked well?
One of the key challenges that we see across the board, there is a huge disconnect between people in positions of power and who is effectively right now the global majority, which is the people under the age of 30. And even in developed countries where the share of youth is smaller, we still constitute a large part of, you know, the workforce, the electorate, and so on. And so the fact that the world currently is largely controlled by, and by controlled, I mean people in positions of power, those people are not speaking to people like you and I. Making sure that those people see a value in this intergenerational dialogue is really something that people like I and Fatou and our colleagues in the Youth Advisory Group have been pushing for. And I think some steps that help to build confidence and convince those people that it is valuable to have those youth advisory groups is you want to build a good examples of collaboration. Start with a round table. Start it with a small advisory project. Start by providing some funding from your organization to youth-led initiative. And step by step, you will see how it expands. And so, you know, ask for a finger and then take a whole hand when you have a chance. Don't get discouraged by the initial obstacles.
You've both had to navigate two worlds, the grassroots activism and the high-level policymaking. How do you balance working within systems like the UN while staying true to the energy and the urgency of activism on the ground?
It goes hand in hand for me.
I feel the UN is a space where you understand at least the diplomatic process and how decisions are made, among others. And I'm able to leverage on that to be able to actually use that in my work at the grassroots level. I have experience working in government and now also in this advice role and at the grassroots level and also at the INGO space. So these different experiences have actually been very helpful for me to really be able to know how to engage different stakeholders, what kind of message to share with different stakeholders to get the intended outcome that I desire. So I'll say for young people, these opportunities are very helpful for us to be able to ensure that we are pushing our agenda forward, because you can't push your agenda alone in the grassroots space.
Yeah, I would like to highlight that the reason why we are in the UN space is because we have this connection to grassroots and because we bring real, tangible examples, because we know what people on the ground care about. There's a lot of people who have much greater research experience than I do, who have PhDs and years of working at think tanks. But the reason people like Fatou and I and others come to spaces like the unique perspective that we bring is the direct understanding of people who, in our thematic spaces, in our regional spaces, what they care about and what change they want to see. And conversely, the reason we provide value on the grassroots level, just like Fatou said, is because we have this access at the UN. In this way, this has been an extremely rewarding experience, because also for us as young people to really understand how UN functions on a high level, how those high-level political climate negotiations look like, it is a capacity building for us, and it's something we pass on to the youth movement and the youth constituencies.
That was Benjamin Strzelecki from Poland. Before him, you heard from Fatou Jang from Gambia. Both are members of the UN Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group on Climate Change, nearing the end of their tenure. You can listen to their full interview with Pierre Blondel from the UN News website. Just go to news.un.org. And that's all for this edition. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Development and the Economy. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.